I want to thank everyone for coming, and as far as I know, the world did not end last night, right? And if it did, if the world did end when we're all sharing the same dream, right? So today I'm going to be talking about attachment, and this is when we look out at the world and we have a take on what we see. We label, we compare, and we also have an assumption, an underlying assumption of who it is, who we are when we do that. And this whole process I'm going to explore from many different angles today.
那是昨天，如果真的来临的话，那我们今天就是大家一起做同样的梦。我今天的讲题是执着。基本上呢，想要跟大家分享的就是说，当讲执着这个话题的时候呢，所要讲的就是我们如何对我们所看到的世界贴标签，然后如何去在这个所有的这个行为当中呢，怎么样去分别它们。
So what I'm going to talk about today involves definitions of attachment in the West and in Buddhism. I'm going to go into some technical details using the 12 links of dependent origination. I'm going to talk about attachment in practice and the seductive, subtle nature of attachment, giving some Zen stories. And I'm going to talk about the two famous lines from Faith and Mind and how we can really be clear on how the mind works when attachment happens. And then I'm going to be ending with some attitudes, and we have time solutions, right? I always have too much material. So the, I'm sorry.
今天讲的呢，第一个就是跟大家分享一下 我个人认为这个执着的定义是什么，然后这个定义呢，当我讲这个定义的时候，是从一般这个世俗观念来定义这个执着是什么，然后呢，我会同时也用佛法的观念来定义执着是什么，同时我会跟大家分享用这个十二因缘的观念来解释，看执着到底是什么。 接着呢，我又会跟大家分享，就是在修行方面，我们要怎么能够认识自己心中产生出来的一些执着，然后用什么方法来处理它，也会在同时谈到这个，更在观念和态度上，修行的观念和态度上，应该怎么样去针对这个执着这个问题。
So the fundamental question I'll be dealing with, I'm putting it in a very contemporary way, which is how do we know when we're fooling ourselves? How do we know when what we're perceiving, what's in our minds, is something that's really there, or is it something that we have manufactured? This holding on to this idea and the continuation of these kinds of grasping in our mind towards a view of self. This is attachment, and this is what we'll be talking about.
这个方面呢，也就是说，当我们看一件事情的时候，或一件人，当我们针对人事物这个境起来的时候呢，我们是从一个这个妄，就是说虚妄的这个出发点来看这个周遭的世界呢，还是不是从一个虚妄的这个出发点来看周遭世界？
So just 10 minutes ago, I was driving on Queens Boulevard, And there's a left that you make on Van Loon to get to Corona Avenue. You only have about 3 seconds to make this left turn light. And I thought, this is not fair. This is really, really annoying. And then I thought, well, it's annoying for me, but for the people traveling down Queens Boulevard, it's a pleasure. They don't have to stop for a stupid left-hand light. And then I thought, well, I really understood this from another point of view, and then I felt very proud of myself for making this observation. So, once again, into the realm of attachment.
就举一个刚刚十分钟前发生的一件事，我在开车，然后要就是有一个灯呢，红绿灯呢，它那个换的那个从红灯换成从绿灯换红灯这个时间非常的短，所以该我的车子快要换的时候呢，它这个红灯就显出红灯来了，所以我就不能够转。那我心里就马上起了一个这个嗔的念头，就是说，这个灯真的是很讨厌哈，这么短，让我没有办法很顺利的就开过去。可是呢，我又转了一个念，说，这个红绿灯的这个安排呢，是跟这个行人啊，那行人看到这个红绿灯的这个跟我的观念不一样，因为他们就比较长的时间能够穿过马路。所以我就在这一个短短的几秒钟之间呢，我这个头脑就从这个很烦躁的这种情况转过来，变成一个很了解这个情况是怎么样。这个短短的几秒钟就让我感受到这个执着我心里产生了一些对这个红绿灯的一些观念的执着。
So attachment is very, very tricky. It's tricky to perceive, tricky to get rid of. When you think that you have conquered it, it comes back and hits you from behind without you really even knowing it.
所以执着这个呢是个人内心之中对一些某件事情的这些看法或是观念，还有对执着自己的看法和观念，有的时候是不是很容易看到的。
So I'm going to get into some definitions now, because when we talk about this topic, attachment is not really described in Buddhist literature as such. There are many, many components that are more emphasized, and attachment is kind of a popular way of talking about this phenomenon. So that's why I'm going to start talking about some Western definitions and then a little bit more technical into Buddhist definitions.
执着这个定义并没有一个在说这个经文里面并没有一个很明显说什么什么什么就是执着只是就是说可是呢经典上都讲到有关执着的地方有很多地方又谈到那所以我现在要跟大家分享的呢就是一般这个世间解释所谓的执着是什么或者是那佛法由佛法观念来解释那执着又是什么
So in the West attachment, the word attachment has a very different meaning than it does in the Buddhist sense in the West there are lots of Hollywood movies, TV shows where you'll see a rich fancy baronial character, someone who's quite successful, who points to a car in his garage or a horse and say, this is the prize of my collection. I have a great attachment to it. And it might be a small admission of weakness, but it's really saying, well, this is who I am. This is my indulgence. This is something I have an ability to do because of my wealth and power.
一般世间对执着的这个定义就是说好像我对于什么东西非常的喜爱然后我很舍不得它比如说一些很有钱的人或是很有名的电影明星或者怎么样他对于一个车跑车特别的喜爱所以他就会说这是我真的是花了很大的 努力来够拥有这样东西，然后我对这样东西非常的有执着。
So in the Buddhist sense, attachment is connected to the first two of the three poisons, greed, hatred, and ignorance. So attachment is really connected with greed and hatred. And it means some conscious or barely conscious clinging, grasping, or a pushing away of that which is perceived to be external to us.
用佛法的观念来解释呢，这个执着是跟这个我们所谓的贪嗔痴三毒里面的前二毒贪和嗔非常的有关系。那主要的用佛法的观念来解释，就是说对于这个潜意识上，就是头脑意识里面或是潜意识里产生的一种对于这个。一样的事物或是怎么样，非常的有一种想要抓取的这种力量存在。
Calm and in a state of non-abiding and transcending of the self, well, there is no attachment. But one of those things that's easier said than done, and we'll be discussing that in a little more detail.
那如果这个定义是这样子的话呢？那转过来说，如果说当我们境界起来的时候呢，身心保持安定，然后对于境界不产生喜欢或是不喜欢想要抓取的这些念头或是动作的话，那你就不会产生这样子的执着。
So at its most basic level, attachment is taking projections of the mind as real. It is conceiving that an appearance, an object, a sensation, or a thoughtis solid, separate, and unchanging. To attach to something is to ignore impermanence and emptiness.
从这个最基本的观念来解释这个执着，就是说，对于这个境界产生的时候呢，把这个境界当成是一个真实、不变，然后永远存在的一个现象。就是如果是这样子的话呢，你就对这个佛法所说的这个无常和空不相应。
Now I'm going to go into a brief discussion of the 12 links of dependent origination. Now the reason I'm doing this is to hone in on those parts of the link that are really most appropriate to the subject I'm discussing, attachment. And I'm going to go very briefly over the first six of these links.And then I'm going to talk about links 7, 8, and 9, which is really what the talk is about. And then just for completion, end with the 10, 11, and 12. So that's what I'm going to do now.
现在我要跟大家讲一下十二因缘。那十二因缘里面呢，第七、第八和第九这个环是跟今天的主题是有密切关系的。那我会现在跟大家稍微解释一下十二因缘它的内容。
So the 12 links of dependent origination is a diagram that shows how fundamental ignorance keeps manifesting in different ways, each link building on one another, and keeps us in an endless cycle of birth and death. It's how weperceive the world, why we perceive it the way we do, and why we make some of the decisions and take some of the actions that we do.
十二因缘呢，最先的那一环就是无明。那从无明开始衍生一环一环最后就是到十二环就是老死。那就是这个十二因缘呢，里面解释的就是说我们这个众生是怎么样产生的，然后众生是对于周遭的这些境界是用采取什么样的行动，这业是怎么产生的，所以在十二因缘里面有很清楚的解释。
Dependent origination is usually discussed by taking ignorance as the first link. even though as an endless chain, you really can't find a beginning and end of it, unless you get out of the whole chain entirely. So the first is ignorance. The next in that link is karma, action. And that is generated by ignorance. And then the third link is consciousness, the awareness that grows and the sense of a separation, of duality, comes within consciousness. And then there is the fourth link, which is called name and form, and that's the development of our mind and bodies. That's how we start to manifest in the world as sentient beings. Then the fifth link is the development of the six entrants, our sense organs, taste, touch, smell, all of the objects of the mind are then accessible through the six entries. And then contact, which is when we start to perceive sense objects as being other than us, either that could be internally or externally. And that's just a very quick run through of the first six of the cycle.
前面六环呢，第一个是无名，第二个是形，第三是视，然后是名色，六入触。这六环呢，因为是无名，所以产生这个行，这个行为，然后因为行为呢，就种下了这个识，这个识就是意识就种下来了。那因为有这个意识呢，所以这个名色就产生了。因为有名色呢，所以这个六入，也就是眼耳鼻舌身意产生了。因为这个六入产生了六根呢，六根产生了以后呢，就跟这个六尘有接触，接触以后这个触就产生了。所以这整个六环就是这样的一个关系。
So I realize that in discussing the 12 links of dependent origination, each one of these links could be a separate 45-minute lecture. And so I just ran roughshod right through them to get to the point that I really wanted to get to. Just beginning on the seventh link, which is the level of contact. Now this is, I'm sorry, so the sixth is the contact. That's when we first come into contact with the sense organs, as I mentioned. It's at the seventh that sensation arises. And with sensation, there are the feelings of liking, disliking, and neutrality. So it's only here that we can become aware of our mind as ordinary sentient beings. These first six links, ignorance, karma, consciousness, name and form, the six entries, and even contact, are something that are somewhat below our awareness. It's only when we start to feel sensations that our conscious mind starts to become engaged.
十二因缘这个主题，其实真的要花时间的话，需要花很长时间来解释。我现在就是跟大家稍微提到一下而已，主要是，我的重点是想要跟大家提的，就是第七环这个受，这个因为当六入产生跟这个六根跟六尘接触以后呢，就有这个受的这个产生，受产生了以后呢，这个时候我们的这个。我们众生才会有这种所谓有这种觉知啊，知道自己自己的存在。所以这个时候我们这个觉知的这个念头就会产生。所以这个受，因为有这个受以后呢，就会产生一种三种不同的受的感觉，一个是喜欢、不喜欢，或者是中性的。然后因为有喜欢不喜欢，接着下面一环就是爱取有，这几环就会产生出来。
So here we are at the seventh link, sensation. Light is coming into our eyes. We are feeling the seat under us. There's the clothes on our body. There's the sound of my voice. But at this level, you haven't identified these things as what I just mentioned. just sensation. But then, by the eighth link, which is desire, you've really started to identify what it is that you're feeling. You have a more conscious awareness of it. This is the realm of strong feelings associated with habit energy. It's a structuring of perception according to our karmic disposition, for or against or neutral towards something. This just bubbles into our awareness, the feelings of desire, the feeling of ill will. It's right here at its most primary level of labeling conscious awareness. So without desire and the consequential gravitation towards or away from a mind object, there could be no attachment. So that is why the steps in the cycle are described as dependent, because each step has to have a predecessor, one before the other one can manifest.
在讲受下去的那一环叫做爱，这个时候呢，就是其实当比如说我们现在我在这里讲话，你听到我的声音，你看到这个光，看到这个周遭的这种现象，是一种受啊，是一种受的这个就是你的六根跟六尘的接触，这就叫受。这个时候呢，事实上你没有起这个爱或是喜欢不喜欢这个念头的时候呢，这个执着没有产生。可是当你在产生这个喜欢不喜欢啊，或者是中性，就是说认知这个你接触，就是你六根跟六尘接触这个时候产生的一种心理的这种一种喜欢或者不喜欢的时候呢，这个时候呢，执着就慢慢就潜在就产生在你的这个意识里面了。
So the ninth link is grasping, clinging. This is the link that is usually associated with attachment. This is where we pick and choose. It's more conscious, more an act of will or volition. So to recap these last three links, seven being sensation, eighth being desire, ninth being grasping, you can think of it in a scenario like this. You walk into a jewelry store and you see this diamond, this beautiful diamond. The light from the diamond hits your eyes. All of the colors, the shape, the luster, the satin that the diamond is sitting in, all comes into your mind and you like it. This is pleasing. And then the eighth level comes in. It's like, this is really nice. This would really look nice on my girlfriend. You know, I think she'd really like this, and she might even love me more because of this. It's a beautiful diamond. So then the ninth link, volition, comes in. So I steal the diamond. It's really acting on the desire, grasping.
现在用一个例子来解释这个受爱恨取这三环的这些关系。比如说你走到一个珠宝店，你看到一个非常非常漂亮的钻石，你看的时候呢，你的眼睛接触到这个钻石然后这个就是受，然后你就起了这个说这个钻石很漂亮，哎，我很喜欢这个钻石，这个念头起了。那这个念头起了以后，下一个念头就是说我的女朋友可能会很喜欢这个钻石，如果我买给她的话，她会特别的爱我，那就爱我更多。那所以我现在我就想到，就是说为了要满足讨好我的这个女朋友，所以我现在就用一个行为去想要去拿这个钻石，那我就下定主意去把这个钻石偷过来。所以这三环整个就是爱，这个受跟爱跟取就是这样一个关系。
So if we continue our investigation of the ninth link of grasping, we can see that there are gross and subtle attachments. On the gross level, people seem to instinctively believe that there are good and bad helpful and harmful behaviors. They are seemingly good attachments. So alcohol, drug addiction, and criminal behavior are normally considered bad, and charity, philanthropy, and success are seen as good. The underlying desire to do good and serve others, these are unquestioned secular paths. Very few people would doubt somebody who is a big success or has a lot of money is somehow not doing that well. And these things in our world are unequivocal signs of success and achievement.
执着来讲呢，对一般的观念来讲，有好的，有坏的啊。坏的执着呢，比如说，对酒啊，或者毒品啊，或者一些不好的行为啊，就是染上这样子的行为，是一种不好的一种执着。那好的执着是什么呢？比如说做好事啦，像那种慈善家捐钱。产生心里一种觉得很了不起的这种感觉哈，这种行为呢，一般人讲说，就是做好事是一个好的一种执着。
So it would be hard to imagine addiction or some criminal behavior that didn't have some attachment associated with it. And the desire to be helpful and good seems to be worthwhile and admirable. But in the Diamond Sutra, it points out how even charitable acts that are amazingly munificent, that are very, very generous, even acts like that, when they're attached to a self,a person, a sentient being, a lifespan, when acts are done in that manner, then they are not worth even four lines of a sutra, of the Diamond Sutra, or any other sutra. A recitation and a teaching of that, conveying those lines to someone where you can actually help them get liberation, not so much feeding or material goods, but actual liberation from the cycle of birth and death,that is an act whose charity can't be measured.
刚刚讲到吸毒对于这个染上吸毒或是一些不好的行为大家都很清楚的知道这就是不好的一种执着。可是对于这个做好事帮助别人这种行为呢大家可能不太明白为什么说这样子也是一种执着呢？金刚经解释，金刚经里面提到，就是说，曾经比较，就是说，你做很多很多的好事，好像就是像须弥山这样大的一个这么多量的一个好事，也不能够比说有一个人诚心的称颂四句金刚经的句子。或者是教他人称颂这个金刚经这样子的功德还比那个捐就是做像须弥山这样大的这个功德的人要这个众生要多。主要的原因是因为金刚经颂的这个是教这个众生所谓这个空是什么样的观念，然后怎么样能够真的是得到自在，这个是这样子的功德是远超过于这个做这么大的善事的人。
So even the noblest sentiment, the desire for enlightenment itself, that can be a great attachment. The wish to be free of all attachment, Nagarjuna wrote, is a great attachment indeed. So all attachments and their objects, without exception,are dependent, relative, and empty of self-nature. Right? Whatever you're attached to, what is in your mind, what you think is your goal, that is going to continually change. That idea in your mind is something that is not substantial, it's not real Buddha Dharma. It is a mind created phenomenon.
从这个修行的观，对修行者的观念来讲呢，文殊菩萨曾经警告，就是说想要这个追求这个得解脱的这样子的一个观念，也是最大的一个执着，也要把它放下来。也就是说，只要你身心内外所产生的各种色相，都要知道它是无常、是空，这样子你才会不会对这些现象产生这个执着。
But is attachment really so bad? Anyway, I mean, okay, we don't want to be drug addicts, but to achieve success, to acquire wealth, a rock star.A famous scientist, the head of a major corporation, there's nothing inherently wrong with any of these pursuits. Actually, and the reason that I chose this topic of attachment is because this idea of what we do in the world, right, how we move through our lives in relationships or our jobs or whatever, all of these things can be confusing from a Buddhist point of view if they are drawing us into themselves. So the idea of talking about attachment in the way that I'm doing, what I'm trying to convey is to give people an opportunity to think about it a little more deeply and really understand what's going on in their minds and trying to distinguish when you're...feeling something that is truly the deepest you and actually not self-generated, which of course is difficult, and knowing when you're sort of being buffeted about by things that are just going on in your mind and you're making yourself crazy.
今天我选这个话题呢，主要就是想希望经过这个来跟就是大家讨论一下这个，就是任何这个警戒，就是头脑里面产生的一些观念，或是对于人事物，你在这个生活当中呢，对这些现象应该要用什么正确的观念来看它。
So, even if you achieve this kind of success that you're looking for.It has a transitory nature. I mean, you're a great tennis player, and you're fit and healthy, and you have a serve that will vanquish any opponent, but one day, your ball won't make it over the net, and one day you won't even make it to the courts.
举例来说，今天你也许是这个网球的这个明星可是呢，你不可能一直都是网球的明星，总有一天你的身体会变成一个程度呢，你就没有办法打网球，或者是你整个人都会就会死亡，不会再存在这个世界上，你就根本不可能继续打网球。
So I will be coming back to this again and again, the idea of fooling ourselves, and as I mentioned.Even pursuing enlightenment, you have to look at what the Heart Sutra says, that ultimately, beyond upside-down views and dreaming mind, there is no wisdom or attainment. Whatever we actually perceive now as something that will get us out of where we are, something that will improve our lives in a Buddha Dharma way, we once again have to examine it quite carefully.Okay, so this is even on the most subtle level, but we have to, we always have to remember that there is something very simple. There is a simple way of dealing with these things. Right? I'm going to be talking about a lot of complex things, but there is something quite simple, and that is practice itself. That is the belief, faith, understanding,in the three jewels, in the 12 links of dependent origination, on the three characteristics of impermanence, of suffering, and no self. all of these things are there before us, there for us to study, to take seriously. And we might think that vows and practices and attachment themselves, but that's really playing with words at this point. We really do our best in each moment.
我到现在讲了一大堆，想要提醒的就是说，如果你什么都还没听到的话，我现在要告诉你，最重要的就是要修行，修行就会帮助你了解所谓你内心所产生的各种错误的观念和执着。
So in approaching practice, Sherpa noted that when people come on retreats.He saw two different kinds of attitudes, generally speaking. The first are the people who really just care about their suffering, and they want to get rid of their suffering. And the idea of enlightenment is some sort of a fairy tale to them, something so unattainable it's not even worth trying. The second group is the kind that...says, I want enlightenment. I mean, I want it now. I want it. I want it today. You know, I'll wait till tomorrow if I have to, but I really, really want it.
等到修行呢，师父曾经说，来修行的人基本有两种心理的态度。第一个呢，他来的这样，第一种呢，就是说，因为他感觉人生很苦，想要这个离苦。可是对于正道这个观念呢，开悟这个观念呢，对他是遥不可及，根本就不去想，觉得说他是不可能正道的啊，或是开悟。第二种呢是来的原因就是要开悟啊，非常急迫的想要开悟啊，非常急迫到什么程度呢？希望明天就开悟，最好呢现在就开悟，所以就是有这样子的两种。
So I'm showing that people are really grasping after various things. People who have embarked on the path or are interested in the path know there's something wrong, that's the truth of suffering, and they're really looking for some way out. So recently I gave a talk at a college, and a woman came up to me.And she asked me about levitation and immortality. Now, she was dead serious. This wasn't just about, have you heard about anything like this, or do such things exist? This was no. How do you do it, you know? And once I realized how serious she was, I sort of gently said, well, Chan, we don't emphasize this. I said, don't get me wrong, I'm all for it. If I could levitate and save money on buying a metro card, you know,that would be great. You know, and immortality, I could watch innumerable episodes of Seinfeld or The Office. Right? There'd be no limitation.
最近我在一家私立大学演讲，那讲完以后呢，有一位年轻的女生啊，女学生走到我面前问问题，她说，她就是长生不老啊。还有这个身体可以这样补起来啊，就拿作为身体补起来，要怎么样练啊？然后我听了他这个问题的时候呢，我知道他并不是说有没有这样现象，而是就是说他想要问我说怎么样练到程度可以变成长生不老啊，长生不死，然后呢能够这个打坐到这个可以把身体都补起来的现象。所以我就很简单的跟他讲说，我们学禅哈，我们对这方面哈，不是很重视。
So I got down to the fundamental issue. I said, any supernormal power like this is not going to address suffering. It's not going to be the solution. But she wouldn't take no for an answer. So I said, well, look, there are other traditions where they.Pursue this. I mean, I might think it's questionable, but it's certainly out there. But Chan does not go there.
I told him, 即使你 变成长生不老啊，对这个离苦其实是不相干的，那可是他一直很迫切想要知道是要怎么样练成长生不死啊，这个这些修行的方法，那我就跟他说，我们禅不重视这方面，那其他的一些外道有些外道有在教这样子的一些方法。
So it's easy to disparage someone like that, to put someone's behavior, someone's attitude like that down, and just characterize them as grasping after fantastical ideas. And the attitude seems naive and lost in delusion, but I'm not so sure how different we really are. When you see something that you are utterly convinced is wrong, well,You don't have to worry about going there yourself. You've written it out of your mind. But there may be things that you're pursuing that seem like absolute reality to you, which you still grasp about. And that's, once again, the subtle nature of attachment.
像这个例子很明显的，对，因为你跟你的观念非常的不同，所以你很清楚，你就知道他的这个观念想要练这个长生不死的这个观念啊，是不对的。可是呢，你必须要很清楚的知道你自己一些这个非常就是看不清楚的、看不到的这种执着，你要自己要很清楚。
And look how seductive talk about supernatural powers is, right?It immediately gets people's attention. Look how prevalent it is in popular culture. Look at the movies about Superman, Batgirl, X-Men, Wonder Woman, Thor, almost endless list. And they're very, very appealing. Even Jimmy Yu, one of Sherpa's chief disciples, when he was a very young teenager, was enticed.By the idea of being able to walk on the ceiling, it's very seductive.
这种神通，对一般来讲都是很期望的啊。即使不但是在佛教徒里面啊，在一般的大众呢，对这个这种所谓的这个神通啊，或是有这种超人的这种。各种不同的这种技术非常的这个向往，所以这个电影里面常常演的一些这个超人啊，或是超女啊，或是这个一大堆，就是这些这个非常有这个就是超出一般人的一些记忆的这些神化的这些人非常的向往。
So these ideas really feed into our fantasies. Imagine if I could lift up a building with one hand. Boy, that would certainly show my boss, who asked me to stay late and write some stupid report. Or if I had x-ray vision, I could just read the stock reports before they come out and make a fortune. It's too bad that real life doesn't really conform to our fantasies. So let's say we calm down, we abandon thoughts of superheroes and outlandish fantasies, and we really practice strictly, sincerely, and we toe the line of practice, then we should be all right and not worry about falling astray. Well, it's not quite, and the next story I tell will be an illustration. Okay, so here is the story of a very famous Zen story.Two monks who are walking in the forest, and they come to a stream where there is a bridge crossing the little stream. Sitting next to this bridge is an old woman. It's apparent that she wants to cross the stream, but it's a very narrow bridge, and she dare not cross by herself. So she's sitting there at a loss. The two monks approach. One monk, without saying a word,picks the old woman up, puts her on his shoulders, and walks across the bridge, and then puts her down. And then the two monks continue walking. After a half an hour, the second monk, turns to his companion who carried the old woman across the bridge and says to him, "Don't you know that it is utterly 100% against our order for you to touch a woman? What's the matter with you?" And the first monk says, "I put her down at the bridge. You've been carrying her for the last 30 minutes."
现在再举一个例子啊，一个故一个禅宗讲的一个故事啊，来来说明一下这个在修行者里面呢，对一些自己所认知的观念的一种执着。这故事是这样子的啊，有一天两个和尚，走到河边要去坐船，那看到一位老妇女，也要过。不是过，他们要过河哈，过河，不是等船，就是要过去这个河。那看到一个妇女要过河，可是这个她这个老妇女呢，很明显的就是不知道怎么样过去，因为她很担心，因为她身体不是很健壮，所以其中的一个和尚呢，就很快就把这个妇女这个背在她的背后啊，就这样子。咚咚咚的就过河了，就过去了。过去以后呢，就把这个妇女就放下来，然后就走了。然后他们这两个这个和尚就继续再走，走了一段时间以后呢，那个另外一个和尚就对这个刚刚这个背这个妇女的这个和尚讲说：“你明知道我们的戒律里面哈，是不可以这个碰触这个女性，你怎么可以？”居然还把他抱在你的这个背上，还这样子走过了一段这个河哈，然后这个和尚抱这个妇女的这个老妇人的这个和尚就跟另外一个和尚说，我在半个钟头以前呢已经把他放下来了，你呢还是一直背着他背到现在。
So the first monk, the one who carried the old woman, we can presume that he exhibited natural, spontaneous.Compassion. He responded to the situation without regard to self or gender or any other kind of structure. He saw the old woman, felt compassion for her situation, responding to causes and conditions, it was clear what to do, and he simply did it. End of story. Now, the other monk.Was filled with judgment, ill will disguised as righteous indignation, and a decidedly dualistic point of view. The old woman that he carried, that the other monk carried, what seemed to be of no concern to the second monk. The solidity of his views were much more important to him than whatever plight this old woman was in.
这个故事让我看到，就是说，第一个这个和尚背着这个妇女过河的这个和尚呢，他就是一个看到这个境界需要怎么处理，他就去怎么样处理啊。那另外那个和尚呢，他是对自己的一些所谓戒律的观念呢，非常的执着，觉得一定是不可以怎么样怎么样怎么样，而且。不但是这样子呢，对于其他另外一和尚做的这个行为，跟他的这个观念正好有相处的时候呢，他马上就起这个那个和尚是不对，而他自己本身这个对戒律的观念的这个认识是对的，所以他有这种可以指认他的这个错误的这种可以做出这样子一个行为。
So fine. So what do we make of this story?The second monk seems to be the heavy, the bad guy. But why? He thought that he was doing the right thing. He was convinced. He was not being consciously greedy or dishonest or mean or vindictive. He was maintaining discipline and protecting the Sangha. And this could have been the case, but once again, he wasn't responding to the situation as it was. And this reminds me, there's a story in the Gateless Gate, Woman Guan, of a master scolding the monks for responding to the dinner bell, right? Because their only involved with what's external to them. They're not actually responding to their truest nature.
这个故事就是说，当我们对自己的认知非常执着的时候呢，我们就没有办法能够对于这个周遭应该怎么样去处理看得很清楚。
So, now we discussed various views of attachment definitions, some examples. Now let's just drill down a little bit to the level of meditation, where whatever method you're using, or reciting Buddha's name, or doing prostrations, whatever you're doing, you often bring something to a particular session. There's something that goes on before. You have some expectation. If things didn't seem to go well before, and you seem to be falling off your method, and you made vows and they seem to have been broken, you can be upset with yourself. So you'll sit there vowing not to do the same mistake, not to make the same mistake that you did previously. And this can cause you to really, really attach to this idea of doing well. It will make you tense up. On the other hand, let's say you had a meditation session where you really floated on a cloud. Everything was quite wonderful. So now, the next time you sit, you say, well, that was great. I can't wait for the train to come in and take me for a ride again. I'm just going to relax and let it happen. And then you can fall asleep just thinking, you know, that everything has been accomplished. So in meditation, this idea of attachment, of having concepts and expectations in your mind, and evaluations from the past, all of those things can take you away from your method. And of course, the method is itself the antidote.
用这个我们在打坐的时候来举个例子，就是说，当我们打坐的时候呢，各种的这个现象产生的时候呢，我们会产生，比如说我们做得很不好的时候呢，我们就发愿下一次一定要做得很好如果下次没有做好的时候呢，我们心里又起了一些不舒服的一些感觉这种就是对于这个一定要做很好的这种观念呢，产生有很深入的一个执着。另外呢，比如说你做得很好，那你就希望说下一支香呢还要做的也是跟刚刚这么好那这个呢，这个时候呢，你又对这个做好的，就是说下一次一定要做好的这个产生了一个执着。所以这种就是说在我们的修行当中呢，各种的这种态度，还有这种心理的这种产生的现象呢，都是一种会让我们产生对现象执着的也就是说在打坐的时候呢，我们也会发现到一些对于这个现象产生的一些执着。
So I've talked about things that pull us off the method, that make us less natural, less compassionate, how we can be very subtly moved out of the moment and into something that is just mind created. So, how are you going to respond to this? Let's look at some other ways of looking at what's going on. And I want to talk about two lines from Sun San's, the third patriarch's famous poem of Faith and Mind. Because I think that these lines can help us get a baseline, if you like, of where we can be naturally, where we can be in a way that we are either not attaching or very, very quickly aware of our attachments and not to go with them. So, in these lines, Sun San said, the supreme way is not difficult if only you do not pick and choose. Neither love nor hate, and you will clearly understand. I'm just going to speak about those four lines.
现在跟大家讲就是三组 真灿在信心营里面开头讲的几句话：至道无难，唯贤简择，但莫真爱动然明白。
So when I first heard those lines, I have to admit I was quite baffled. I mean, you make decisions all day long. We're always picking and choosing. And what are we supposed to do? Not picking and choosing. It doesn't make much sense. It sounds like you have to just abandon who you are. You know, if you like Indian food and you don't like Italian food, well, just switch it around, right? Just have an entirely different attitude, or drop the attitude completely. No more Krispy Kreme donuts, no more TV, no more going out. You just, you know, sit in your room and hope that your mind doesn't pick or choose. And this kind of an attitude is what Sherpa pointed out is really an ego-based attitude. It's a total misinterpretation. And as Sherpa was warned, this can really lead to escapism and arrogance.
我最初听到这句话，这几句话的时候呢，马上的一种观念就是说，哦，那表示什么都不能选择喽。那我以前喜欢吃印度餐。那现在是就不应该喜欢吃印度餐，然后就换成另外一个呢？或者是我喜欢看电视，那现在最好电视也都不要看喽，那我就起了这些一种疑惑啊，到底应该什么叫做危险选择啊？这个到底是什么意思？然后师父又说，事实上，如果是心里起了这样子的一种反应，就是说什么都不取的话呢？那就变成是一个逃避现实啊，要躲的一种现象。那如果觉得说师父说会心里因为心理上这个会产生一种这个逃避的现象，或是一种傲慢的一种心理会产生出来。如果对这个信心灵这几句话不了解的话
，So these lines of Sun San are not telling us that we should not be who we are. They're asking us to be very clearly in the moment, not caught up in discriminating. When you delve into discrimination, you are blown this way and that by your deluded perceptions, imagination, fears, and desires. As Sherpa had said, picking and choosing is the desire to escape our vexations.Another master, Musung, talks about our addiction to picking and choosing. Once again, it's not what comes into our mind, it's what we do with what comes into our mind.
事实上，这几句话呢，并不是说限制我们，应该要怎么样，这个不应该想什么，而是说头脑里面有一些观念产这个现这个有一些现象产生的时候呢，应该怎么去处理它
？So it's important to note that these lines are appropriate for us at whatever level we find ourselves. I think it's a wrong view to look at these lines and say, oh well, fine, that's what someone who's reached highest perfect enlightenment does, but it has no relationship to me. So, yes, it's true that a fully enlightened being, or it's probably true, I really couldn't say for sure, is not going to care whether the Mets win or the Yankees win. I don't think that's necessarily a major concern, right? But it might be the case that some of us care a lot about itwho wins in a particular baseball game or a football game or a basketball game, and that we really care about seeing a movie that has just come out. Okay. But we can still, in any of these situations, with our particular desires, with the configuration of who we are, how we act, all the things that move us or frighten us, with all of those things, we can still use this idea of not picking and choosing. So we can be aware of how we feel in a given situation. If there's anger, desire, dispute, annoyance, if any of these things arise, well, you see it, and you realize that you have options of not fully going with those feelings. Doesn't mean you don't necessarily do the activity. As a matter of fact, in acting this way, you're much more fully in any activity that you do. It's when you're caught up in things that are going in your mind and someone is talking to you and you don't even hear what they say. So you can open up to others around you. You can distance yourself from your own opinions and you can notice other points of view and feelings.
不起各种这个观念，就躲起来，而是就是说，当我们接触这个周遭的人事物的时候呢，我们非常的清楚我们内心世界到底是什么样的现象。如果我们产生喜怒哀乐这些情绪的时候呢，我们很清楚的知道它，而我们也不对它做任何的一些反应。这样子的话呢， 当我们接触周遭人事物的时候呢，我们就会很清楚的知道我们所看到的，我们所感觉到的，我们所接触到的，我们是做的各种行为，我们都很清楚。
So now I'm into the attitudes section of my talk, just our approach, our understanding, things that we can do. So one thing we can certainly learn to recognize impermanence, and we can try to accord with it. Dogen Zenji wrote about not being attached to views of self and being attached to views themselves. These are all subject to fluctuation and change, which upon examination, when you see things changing the way they do, this will disperse any idea that you might have of a permanent self-existing ego. There's nowhere that this can be found in our minds or our bodies. Our bodies are continually changing, our minds are continually changing. There's nothing substantial, nothing not changing to hold on to. And as Sherpa has said, when emptiness and impermanence are understood, first you deal with impermanence. This is the something that you can contemplate first, and then you can start to move into a contemplation of emptiness. And then when those two are understood, realized, then you can get into the realm of understanding and experience of no self.
当我们对于这个周遭者还有自己内心世界都看得很清楚的时候呢，我们就自然的会了解到无常的观念，对一切的世间，我们看到的，我们都知道都是无常。那师父曾说，就是当我们对这个无常和空有彻底的了解和体验的时候呢，我们才能够体验到无我。
So we and everyone around us certainly exist, but just as certainly we are all empty of self nature, both empty and existent simultaneously. And this doesn't make logical sense, but if it did, it wouldn't entirely be Buddha Dharma, at least when you first encounter it. So this is why the Buddha declares in the Diamond Sutra that someone on the Bodhisattva path ought to make a vow to save all sentient beings and simultaneously recognize that there are no sentient beings to save. Okay. So we take the example of Sung San and his poem of Faith and Mind, and what the Diamond Sutra is telling us, among so many teachings and sutras, we can face the realities of a given moment when we understand that it's fruitless to attach to things and outcomes that are out of our control, and they arise and perish of their own accord. So Dogen Zenji said, flowers, though we may be attached to them, still fall. While weeds, though we may hate them, still flourish. There is a natural order to things, and our likes and our dislikes arise naturally too, but we don't have to be bound by them. And most importantly, I want to add, when we do fall out of these things, at any moment we can always pick up the practice, we can always pick up the method. So if we can develop a bare awareness that is not subjugated to choice, awareness that does not succumb to discrimination, then this is applicable to anyone, in any situation, great or small, great sages and beginning practitioners. And so what might this actually be like? How would this play out in real life? Well, it could be simply being offered pieces of cake, and you say, all right, I'll take the smaller one, right? I'm not going to be so greedy. And of course, you have to be careful not to say, oh, well, I took the smaller one, I'm being really, really virtuous. Right? And you're back in the world of attachment. And you're in a conversation with a bunch of people, and a thought comes into your mind of like, boy, this guy who's talking is really a jerk and doesn't know what he's talking about. And you could just sit on that and not express it. You can learn to maybe not take the second drink for the road. You can become a better listener and not talk quite so much.
当我们对这个无常、这个空和无我比较有更清楚的了解以后呢，我们就会比较了解在《金刚经》里面所提到的，要发愿度一切众生，同时呢知道没有一个众生被我们所度。同时在这个一些其他的禅师里提到的一些诗里面，你念了他们的诗的时候，你就会很清楚的知道世间的现象就是这样子啊。因缘和因缘生就是这样子的自然产生自然的生灭。如果再把这样子的一种修行的观念和体验呢放在你日常生活上以后呢，当境界来的时候你就很清楚的知道，比如说你是一个很喜欢吃甜食的人一个非常好的蛋糕放在你前面的时候，你很清楚的知道你的这种念头想要吃的这种感觉产生出来了你应该用什么样的一个态度和行为去处理这个境界那你就会不会因为这样子受到这个苦，然后就很自在的很知道很清楚的用智慧来处理这个眼前的这个境界。
So we are fine where we are. Attachment and delusion makes us long for things that are outside of us. There really is no other shore to arrive at. We can try to develop an ordinary mind. As Chogyam Trungpa says, this is just an idea that we're not so special. And more than an idea, a sort of way to live, something that you can experience, that you can let go of this idea of distinguishing yourself just for the sake of distinguishing yourself. Once again, if that kind of fame or accomplishment comes out of a real response to causes and conditions, not ego-based, that's fine. And also, this is something that we arrive at eventually. For most of us, for a lot of our lives, we really have to deal with the fact that we really are ego-based. And practice, and realistically speaking, is really about understanding the smaller self, seeing how it manifests and making it shrink a little bit. Actually, Choigang Trungpa says that the ego should be worn out like an old shoe from traveling from suffering to enlightenment. It's a gradual process.
另外一个观念很重要的呢，就是一个平常心的观念。平常心是什么意思呢？就是说对周遭的一切事件发生的一些人事，就是用一种平等心、平常心去对待它、去看它。这个样子呢，就你不会加强自己的自我中心啊，一点一点的。如果用平常心来看一切人事物呢，你成功的时候呢，你不会觉得说啊。遥遥就是很高兴很骄傲啊，那失败的时候也不会觉得说哎呀怎么这么倒霉呢，就是用一个平常的心，什么现象发生的时候呢，就是什么现象的去处理它啊，然后一点一点消融自己的自我中心。一位西藏的一个喇嘛，他的名字叫秋中帕，我不晓得他中文是什么哈，他就说我们的自我中心啊，好像是一个穿在脚上的一个鞋子，穿来穿去这个老鞋子啊，总有一天会把它穿破，把它就丢掉，这个自我中心就是这样子，一天一天的把它这样子像老鞋子一样磨磨磨磨到最后这个老鞋子破掉，然后就没有。
This idea of being comfortable with ourselves and our situation is very important.Nishijima Roshi said that Buddhism is about doing exactly what you want, right? And of course the question is, well, who's doing it and who's wanting it, and understanding that. And this is why Boshin Fosher instructs us to be aware, ask the question, who's walking, who's talking, who's listening as we go through our activities.And we arrive at a point, and I think it's, I'm going to bring up an example of Confucius because obviously part of Chinese culture, and it's also sort of an ordinary example. There's a very famous statement from Confucius about going through various stages of life, and he says finally when he was at the age of 70, he could do whatever his heart desired without going outside the bounds of what is right.So he had, and this is, I think this is in the spirit of what Nishijima Roshi said, of getting to the point where you really can do whatever you want, but there's less of a self, and sometimes at some point no self, that's generating doing what you want. When you do what you want, at this point, you are doing what is most appropriate and causes...and conditions, you are responding to the situations as they are.
如果我们能够真的继续依照佛法的观念，用平常心消融自我中心对周遭的一切人事物发生的时候呢，不会产生这个大起大落的这种心理这个反现的现象，那就能够做到像论语里面孔子讲的。孔子说他到了七十的时候呢，能知天命而不越矩，也就是说走到什么事情做到对人事物的时候，很自然的就知道是什么正确的方法来处理这个眼前的这个现象。
So Bodhidharma said that when your conduct and your understanding are in accord, then you are called a sage. So we're not sages, it's nothing to worry about. Trying to be aware in everymoment, we don't have to worry about sagehood or ordinary sentient beinghood. And the reason that I bring up things like this, once again, when one gives a talk, it's always coming out of your personal experience. And I've been practicing for a long time. And there were certainly times in the past when I would read the acts of great sages, great masters who practiced in extraordinary manners. And I would just feel very discouraged. I would say, that's so far beyond me. I mean, it's not even worth trying. And so in my own practice, my own life, that's something that I've really become aware of, and I really try to mitigate against. I really try to be aware of it and not succumb to those kinds of feelings. So, one thing I'd like to, time is starting to close. So I thought that it might be interesting to ask the question, quite relevant. So if you're really practicing, right, you're a serious practitioner, can you fall head over heels in love with someone and still, you know, call yourself a practitioner when we're trying not to succumb to desire and greed and the ill will of jealousy? That to me is an interesting question.
讲到这里，我想要提一个问题，让大家去想一下。这个问题就是说，对一个就是下大决心要修行的一个修行的人，他可以就是说他能够产生一种对这个异性非常这个有怜爱的这种心理吗？也就是说他能够落到这个恋爱吗？他能够真的看到这个一个他心中很喜爱的这个女的或是男的，他能够真的是就是好像就是忘掉自己能够去恋爱吗？
Okay, so falling in love. How much of what I say is going to change the way things like that actually transpire in the world? Well, of course not at all. And so that's kind of one answer to the question. These kind of feelings that arise in people arise pretty naturally. Maybe they're different at the level of a very advanced bodhisattva, but for most of us, this is really the world that we live in. So it's perfectly natural, and we may, in our own ways, be responding to causes and conditions. We may meet someone. We may be in the office with someone. We may be on a trip with someone, and all of a sudden, various feelings arise and we want to pursue them. Well, you know, as I said, this is natural. I think once again, even in these situations, you can use the idea of not picking and choosing in terms of being very aware of what's going on in your mind. Certainly, we know that relationships are fraught with difficulties. They certainly can be, and there's much history that shows that. So being clear about what we really are feeling, I mean, if you sort of meet someone and you think that he or she is the most wonderful, most beautiful, most intelligent person in the world, that's probably a natural thing that will come up in your mind. But you can examine it and recognize that, yes, you'll feel that way, but that those feelings can change. Those feelings can mature into things that are certainly deeper, but if you attach to that and you really, really believe that that is reality, and maybe even more importantly, that's a reality that you don't want to change, then as things do change, as they inevitably will, you can run into some difficulties. So for us lay practitioners, I think life is pretty much what life is. There's not anything so special except that we can develop this this awareness. And there are other times in our lives when practice may go deeper and our priorities may change. And then hopefully at that point we'll also be clear and aware and in the moment.
事实上，男女之间谈恋爱，或是男女之间就是产生这样子就很这个暧昧的感情，这个是很自然的现象。可是就是说，对一个修行人来讲，应该就是在这个过程谈恋爱的过程中，要很清楚的知道自己身心的一些感觉还有现象，然后知道怎么样去用平常心来处理心中产生的这些现象，还有这个男女之间的关系，在谈恋爱的时候呢，各种过程呢都会有一些变化，那就知道自己要知道怎么样处理它，而不受到伤害，也不会伤害到别人。
And so in closing, I just want to go over some briefly some solutions to this issue of attachment, or ways of looking at it, so that we can diffuse a little bit some of our grasping. And very briefly, Sherpa has talked about developing compassion and realizing how we're interconnected with other people. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, we inter-are. Realizing this, realizing that much of what we've done, how we got here, is so dependent on other people. Well, this kind of view will help us release our views, our solid views of who we are. And at the same time, an idea of humility, an idea that, well, we always could do a little bit better. There's always a response that would have been more appropriate. There were more people that we could have reached. And this idea of humility is something that is meant to detach from grasping the ego, not the idea that nothing I do ever turns out right. That's not what humility is. And lastly, something that I think that is very helpful for lay practitioners, because of the fact that we live busy lives and we can't sit in meditation all day long, and we don't have the kind of respite that we'd like, that we can sit back and look at our life, in kind of a relaxed detachment. We don't generally have that luxury. So I'll say a couple words about contemplation. Okay. So in contemplation, the reason that I'm bringing this up is that this idea of being in the moment and being aware of your thoughts, and the way that Guoxing Huaxue talks about, of seeing that the first thought can then lead to the second thought, and then when that happens, one thought becomes the object of the other, and all of a sudden you're creating a self. You're having ideas of that we're here in Queens, we're listening to a lecture. So many things are present in the mind and very, 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 very familiar and unexamined. But as I said, it's hard to do that all the time. But what I think is somewhat more accessible is the idea of contemplating. That's kind of thinking where you're aware, where you're observing the way that your mind reacts. And of course, there are the four contemplations in Buddhism, the contemplation of the body as being impure, feelings as leading to suffering, the mind as being impermanent, and dharmas as not having self. And I realize that what I just said there could be a whole lecture in itself. But the point that I'm making about contemplation is that when we are in situations and we recognize that it's not just recognizing that anger is happening, but in getting to know ourselves, we start to see patterns that we react the same way to a certain person, that we insist on getting something else from another person. And we do this time and time again, much to our own detriment. We can be aware of these kind of patterns, and I think that this this idea, even with the idea of things that cognitive psychology talks about, recognizing these kind of patterns can be very helpful.
最后，鼓励大家对于这个境界来的时候，用观的这个方法看得很清楚，到底这个周你内心和外在的这些世界的这个现象，到底是看得很清楚，是用一种禅宗的这个方法教的方法，就是观啊，观看这个你的所有现象，很清楚的看到，然后呢，用什么观念来解决这个，来这个消融我们这个执着呢？一个就是用慈悲，第二个呢，就是所谓的一种因果的观念，因缘的观念，就是我们这个人，这个所有我们世间都是息息相关的，对我们所对的人事物都是息息相关，跟我们没有分开的。这两个观念建立起来以后呢，就会能够帮助我们。两个观念建立起来以后，然后用禅宗教的这种观的方法练习让我们的这个察觉这个能力越来越敏锐，所以我们就对周遭的世界能够看得很清楚，然后知道怎么去处理。
So if we lived in a world where we were not caught up in attachments, what would it look like? Well,we might experience the miracles that Layman Pong speaks of. Drawing water and chopping wood. Riding on the subway, reading a book, talking to someone. Your life just as it is. That is a miracle. Thank you very much. Any questions? Hopefully you won't attach to them, but please, we have a few minutes.
Question? The relationship of what exactly thoughts are in relationship to attachment?
Thoughts.
那问题是说，这个执着跟这个自己心里产生的一些念头是什么样的关系？
Well, thoughts are a vehicle for attachment, and thoughts and thinking itself is attachment, I would say.I would say that
thinking is attachment.
When thinking leads to one thought leads to another, and you're caught up in the content of it. That to me is attachment. But as I said, thoughts and thinking don't necessarily have to be in that realm, because even after the Buddha reached enlightenment, there was thinking present, but it wasn't.No longer oriented towards the self. But once again, that's sort of the crux of the talk about how confusing it can be, because just my words now, just describing them, using concepts or whatever, probably calling on memories and attachments, even in responding.
Yes. 他的回答就是说，这个念头产生的时候，这个念头本身没有什么好坏可是就是说，你怎么处理这个念头，产生起来这个念头呢，会让你产生执着。
Okay, sure. I was just going back to the example of the two monks. Do we need some rules, set of rules in our lives to function more effectively, in the sense that, like, coming here, we have to be here at a certain time, or what's the difference between, if we get loose about it, maybe we don't get here on time, not all of us, and so the situation would be a little chaotic in a sense. But and again, to this is my first question. Second question was, but between the first monk and the second monk, let's say that instead of an old lady, it was a young lady who was, she was afraid of a phobia, she had a phobia of heights, and she didn't want to, she was afraid to cross the bridge. What would the first monk do? Would he have shown some compassion and pick her up and take her to the other side? I mean, it's what's going on in the minds, it's really complicated, and I just want to see your point of view on the rules that we have to follow, and but that's...
这个刚刚我的问题是跟刚刚讲的那个两个和尚的那个故事有关系。第一个就是说，这个我们生活之中呢，必须要有这个规则。如果我们不遵守规则的话，那这个我们生活起来就很混乱啊。这是第一个问题。第二个问题，如果这今天这个妇女呢，不是一个老妇女，而是一个很年轻漂亮的妇女，那个第一个和尚会怎么做呢？
Well, I'm glad you brought those up, Basil. I mean, one always feels when one gives a talk that, boy, there's things that you've left out. And one of the things I would have stressed quite strongly in this idea of not being attached, which I really didn't get to, is the idea of responsibility, right? And appropriateness, right? So the monks keeping the rules of their order and all the rituals and chanting, most of the time, that's quite appropriate, and that's what they should do, right? You have to obey the traffic laws. You can't go through a red light, not just because it's against the law, but because, once again, in getting out of yourself, there are other people involved in our actions all the time. So, you know, there is. I know in the Christian world, there's this thing called antinomianism. You know, where you think you're above the natural law, right? And that is a real, you know, that's a kind of Chan sickness. That is something we would never do. And it's good to bring that up in the context of that story because it's an utterly legitimate question and it does have to be addressed. And then the second part about what if, you know, this the old lady was, you know, paranoid or whatever. Well, I'll tell you, you know, the interesting thing about these stories, which I love, is that you've got these stories floating in space, right? You know, it's not like we're looking, I mean, maybe some historian would look for some historical figure, but it's obviously not the point. I believe in the story that first monk, the monk that picked her up, is someone who is in a state of non-self, compassion, and an enlightened state. So in this particular story, he is so in tune with his environment, everything around him, living in the moment, that the old woman's plight is apparent to him. I mean, if he sensed fear or this or that, he might not have acted the way that he did. And actually, that in a sense is a point of the story. The story says that he acted absolutely appropriately in the moment, and in a helpful way, beyond all convention, because in that moment that was correct. It doesn't mean that kind of response would be correct in the next moment, in a different situation. It's really being open, compassionate, and responsive. That's, I believe, the key to that story.
Yeah. 的时候呢，当然每一个人要遵守是他们的一个责任啊，就是所以啊，这是有一种与这种有这样子一个关系啊。对我来说，这个第一个和尚啊，他所表现出来的呢，也就是说在当下这他是应该怎么处理，他就怎么处理啊，而不会去因为是这样子，所以他处理的就很恰当。 虽然说这个当下如果改变了呢，他这样子处理呢可能会就不正确，可是因为他当下的当时他那个时候呢，他是完全的是知道这个现象，他看得很清楚，而知道这个现象应该是怎么样去反应，他就怎么样去反应，所以他是很恰当的处理当下该怎么做就怎么做的现象。这是一个也就是说一个应该是说已经觉悟，就是说修行到觉悟的人，他知道他对周遭的环境呢，他就是很清楚没有这个人我之间的距离，而是该怎么处理当下该怎么处理他就怎么处理，所以就是非常适合很恰当。
Right. I guess.